Vision Radio Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision Radio Show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear.
Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Vision radio show. Today is January 9th, 2017. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. We're going to be interviewing Mr. Larry Bergen again, who is highlighted in the first Secret City. He is a World War II uranium victim. Didn't know it, but he found out about it after he was working there for many years. And we still have this issue with Skype, so let me give him a call and join him in on our radio show. It seems to be the way that we can actually connect with our guests is just call the machine as soon as the show starts. So I've called Larry, and hopefully this will pick up relatively quick. And we're going to have a further discussion. Hey, Larry, how are you today?
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for joining us.
Yes, yes. It's a chilly day here in St. Louis.
Yeah, it's a chilly day everywhere. We have ice and snow on the ground here myself, so it seems to be all across the state.
Yes, but where you're from, you're used to it, aren't you, up north?
not really. We're in Oregon. I'm in Eugene, Oregon, and we get snow. Well, actually, my neighbor and I were talking about it. I've been in Eugene, Oregon for 12 years now. When I first moved here, there was never snow. And the last 3, 4, 5 years, we've had consistent. This is, in fact, the biggest snowstorm I've seen, frankly, in my entire life. I've never really lived in snow. I'm from Southern California. So we are all being affected. I mean, I think that it's very evident that something's happening with the climate. So I don't know who caused it.
It does seem that. Well, here in St. Louis, we actually experience all four seasons. I guess we're fortunate there. But unfortunately, we also experience things all other people around the country do, and that's this radiation exposure.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this is something, you know, you can't talk enough about because of the seriousness of the situation and the issues that, you know, it poses. They want to repeal Obamacare and to put up a better health care plan. Well, that's fine if you can do it. And if you can't, try to prevent some of these health problems from happening, which a lot of these are being derived from radiation exposures from all across the country. You know, it seems like, you know, we want to find a doctor to help you instead of prevent the illness from happening.
Yeah,
that's sort of what it seems like.
That's true.
Where I believe, you know, if you eliminate part of the problems, you shouldn't have any of the symptoms. And that's what we're experiencing here in St. Louis is the symptoms from these exposures from these several waste sites and production facilities located in this one spot.
Wow. It's so stunning that there is just very little acknowledgement of it, even at the state level. Like, you live in Illinois, right? The governor there is yet to acknowledge it, or has he acknowledged it yet?
Well, all these radioactive production sites here in St. Louis back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and such and 80s, They're all located within maybe 20 miles from each other. The factory where it was produced, where it was processed, and even the waste sites themselves aren't, you know, that far away from each other. So, you know, this is a community needs to know that it's a much smaller community than they're aware of, that we're much closer because of this contamination than they previously believed, or, you know, believe they are, I should say. Because, you know, right now I believe most of these people say, well, that's a problem over at Westlake Landfill. Well, that's a problem up in Weldon Springs. Well, that's a problem over in Illinois. And after a while, a few of these people are going to say, you know, there's an awful lot of problems popping up all across
Amen
this area.
To that, brother. Yeah.
So maybe that will get them to the level of consciousness we hope they all, we all hope they come to be aware of the situation and take action to correct it, if not prevent it from continuing.
You know what I think it is, Larry, is we're Americans, and maybe we've all just been indoctrinated, but I think there's just this shock. It's like this, like, what, you know, your little come to Jesus moment or the Scooby-Doo moment where you just like, we never in our million years would have dreamt that our government would have handled this uranium with such intense, gross negligence. And then continue a policy of straight denial. It just, for me still, it knocks me off my feet.
It's easy to deny something you can't see, feel, or hear, you know, something that's invisible. They could deny something invisible all day long, and they're backed by that invisibility. It's having people who come out and question that and take matters in their own hands in some cases. You don't get your own Geiger counter, walk across your own yard, make sure you and your neighbor's yards are safe. You know, maybe that's what it takes, is people to be self-reliant instead of, you know, expecting the government to come in to keep you safe from something that they don't want to admit they created.
Well, you know, that's true. And then we're coming into this thing where citizens are getting actively engaged, and like even this idea of getting your own Geiger counter, which takes some knowledge on how to even read it and what all this stuff means. So then you have this whole group of scientists who have basically been, I don't know, propagated into belief that only they understand it. And so then there turns into this kind of like backbiting fight of like, you're just crazy.
Well,
you guys don't understand
I don't think one person needs to get a Geiger counter as let's say, you know, you have an agency out there to get rid of cockroaches and check for bugs and spiders. You got a business out there that actually goes around and puts on radon detectors to check for radon in your basement. Well, you know, maybe they should have another company out there to take it one step further. I mean, not everyone can or can't afford a Geiger counter, like you said, or knows how to use one. But to look in a phone book or, you know, look up on the internet and say, hey, here's a company that does it very, very reasonably to see if there's any issues that we are unaware of, you know.
Now,
maybe
there's a
market
model
out there for that.
Yeah, mm-hmm. there is a, you know what would happen is, really, could you imagine like going to St. Louis if that, or in your, what's the name of your little town where you live again? So remind people.
Oh, Venice, Illinois is where this factory is located. In Venice.
Right. So,
you know, this would be a good business for this type of city because there is so much production of radioactive waste. I can name four different places where it was processed and three radioactive dumps. So having so much proliferation here in this one area would be a good place to start this business, where somewhere down rural, where none of this ever happened, well, of course, a business like that wouldn't, you know, thrive. But up here, being a radiation collector or, you know, radon gas / radiation, you know, inspection, that could be a new market, and one that should have been done by our government long ago, never to even get to this point. But
isn't that what the EPA was supposed to do? Actually, as we've seen, the EPA has failed miserably in its mission to protect the American people.
Well, there you go. You can pick and choose what they have done right and for whom and where. And you can pick and choose different places where they have failed or haven't acquired the information they need to go further. And you know, you can't blame an agency who wants to help you. It's like blaming a food pantry for not giving you enough food. Well, you ought to be grateful for what little you have. But when this agency, the EPA, is being controlled by a separate entity, that's a different situation. Now, that's like saying a food pantry here, well, they're not giving you enough food, more food, because of your color or because of your religion or something of that nature. Now, that could be a problematic. Now, with the EPA, are they being controlled like that? Are they on a leash? Are they being told who not to investigate and who to investigate? And that takes to a whole different level. And one I'm not willing to get into because that's a wide and deep rabbit hole.
Yeah, you're
and
right.
I gotta, you know, and I got to worry about these residents and these employees at this factory here and my family. So, you know, to get to that level, I have to accomplish what I'm doing here first to see if there's any undue influence on the EPA to overlook and to undervalue their problems.
You know, I have to say it, Larry. I really appreciate your even-mindedness on all of this. It is really a breath of fresh air to see. I mean, in my view, your attitude is very American. You typify the American persona very much at the really what we hold up to be true American values. You're not willing to just throw everyone under the bus. I mean, I make these statements myself. You know, sometimes I'm so angry at the EPA, I do forget the good that they have done. So
you blame a factory for producing radioactive waste, well, you can't blame those employees. They may not even know, but people do because they processed it. And the ones who do know about it, they may be misled. So I've been in this before. I've been in this circle, in this group. I've been one of these employees who ran this radioactive metal and not aware of it. So I can see where that can happen. It's happened to me and my coworkers. So I look at everything from both sides of the mirror from since that day. It's almost a burden I carry because of that factory, because my exposure, that I have to look at everything from a different standpoint. But, again, you know, the EPA can be helpful. That's the whole issue here. See, I'm always a glass half full. I have to find the good to come from this. I don't look at the bad they've done. That's the past. I want to try to see the good they can do, what can come from this. And so that's maybe where I get that level that she was speaking of.
Thank you. Well, look, I want to remind, we're sitting here talking, I want to remind our listeners and maybe introduce you to some of our new listeners, people that might be listening to us for the first time. We're speaking with Larry Bergen from Venice, Illinois, who is at the tail end of a final, is it a litigation or a lawsuit, Larry?
Workers' comp.
A workers' comp. Suit where they are going to be the first people to ever receive workers' compensation due to radiation exposure. Do I have that
correct?
Now,
factory's already been approved for a federal cancer fund for cancers caused by radiation through NIOSH. It's already been approved for over 22 cancers, and it's already paid out over $28 million to 188 families with cancer caused from exposure at this factory. This workers' comp will just take it to the next level and include cancers that's not on their list and illnesses that are attributed to it as well. So it's like a second door of compensation, of help and compensation for its employees.
How many employees, how many people are actually involved in this litigation, in this thing?
Well, the workers' comp, I had 150 people signed up at one time, but a third of them wasn't eligible. Their health problems couldn't be derived from or attributed to radiation, which in a way they're sort of lucky. And as my attorney told them, you know, if anything should arise though in the future, please don't hesitate, come back, because the statute of limitations are for 25 years here in Illinois for workers' comp. Now everything else, I mean everything, lead, mercury, arsenic, you name it, it's only 3 years. But radiation is the only thing that's past that limit. And it's 25 years for exposure. And there's a reason for that. That's how long it takes for an exposure to rear its ugly head, so to speak, and do damage to your body, especially a full-grown adult, because your body is already metabolized to full, you know, adulthood. Your DNA isn't changing as much as it used to. So when you do get an exposure and it does damage your chromosomes, it takes longer for it to develop a cancer or an illness derived from it, where a child or an infant or even a baby, much, much quicker and with much more deadly outcome.
Well, this is really – no. Well, what is the progress of your case right now?
We're just waiting back for some evaluations from a physicist, and once those are done, it should be the beginning of this end for this long line of employees who are sick and ill because this – exposure. And
including
I'm hoping
yourself,
within the next, I'm hoping the next several months, if not weeks. And, you know, again, this is just another window of opportunity for help for these people who've been exposed. We're still working on trying to get help for those residents next door to this factory who were exposed to it as well. And as a lot of people may or may not be aware of, I've been a committeeman on behalf of these residents for the past 7 years, working to find documentation of their exposures and the cause from it. And as it sits right now, we have over 75 cancers in just two blocks next to this factory. And there's only 31 in those two blocks. And in total, we have 360 cancers in six blocks downwind from this factory, and there's only 180 homes. So it's almost 2.5 cancers per house for every house within a six-block area downwind from this factory that processed this radioactive uranium and thorium.
Wow.
And again, they did it with no filters, no dust collectors. All they had was an exhaust fan, which was basically sucking this radioactive dust or particulate and smoke out the factory, and again, drifting downwind, landing in the residents' yards, homes, on their gardens, and our food, on their clothes hanging on their line. And it did it for decades.
Wow.
And they never once warned them or told them. They didn't want to.
Wow.
It just makes sense. If you tell them of a problem, they're going to ask questions, and then after questions comes litigation. Well, they avoided all that by never letting the cat out of the bag, so to speak. They never let the residents know what they were producing or processing.
Wow.
We have an elementary school located 20 feet from this factory. 20 feet.
What?
Downwind. And five teachers and a principal died of cancer.
And I wonder how many of those children, you know, we don't keep track
Lord
of the children
knows.
That had cancers and issues and problems. We have no
directly
idea.
Directly downwind, 20 feet. You know, this two blocks is right east of the factory. And at the end of the two blocks, southwest, which is, you know, the wind comes from the northwest, the southeast is where it blows. And that's where this school is located, this elementary school. And we've heard a lot of family members over the years tell us their children have respiratory problems.
Wow. So, Larry, we're talking about the factory. Why don't you remind our listeners exactly what this factory did and what the exposure was?
Well, this factory was built during the early stages of World War II. There's two small steel factories behind it. And what this building was built for was to assemble tanks for World War II. One of the steel factories produced the bottom half of the tank, and the other steel factory produced the top half, or the turret. And then they would both transport it over to our factory, where it was assembled and then shipped across the street to the Army depot and then off to war. Well, after the war ended, this factory was sold by the government to Dow Chemical. And during its heyday, back in the mid-50s, they started processing uranium for Mallinckrodt over in St. Louis, and they was processing or melting radioactive thorium for other customers. And The uranium process took place for over 4 years. They did it on a monthly basis. One day every month, they would run 20 billets of this uranium. And the reason they would wait an entire month was what was described as a cool-down period. You see, if they would have ran all this uranium in 1 week, well, that machine would have been so hot, they could never have used it again. So to keep from that happening, they would run it one day, once a month, and to keep that accumulation from building up over time. Now, here's the thing. It still was just as radioactive. It just took longer to get there. If they had ran it all at one time, it would have been just as radioactive running it one day every month. The only difference is it took longer to get that level of radiation so people wouldn't notice or it wouldn't register.
Now, did they use that machine for anything else, or was it just a dedicated
machine
to process?
It was a machine that we used to run aluminum and magnesium billets through. See, it was a giant press. It was a vertical press laying on its side. And think of it as a giant Play-Doh factory, where you put the Play-Doh in one end, and you squeeze it out the other end into a shape, like an X or a T or a rod. And that's what we would do. We would put aluminum or magnesium, depending on what the customer would want, and we'd squeeze it out whatever shape they want. Sometimes window frames, sometimes wings for wind generators, you know, all different shapes and sizes. But this was the only machine that was close by that could process these uranium billets into rods, which was later used in submarines for nuclear reactors.
So
they were a subcontractor.
after they did the uranium processing, the once a month, they used it to, they put aluminum and other products through it and made products for consumer
goods. Well, they would
goods.
Switch it out not to contaminate other material.
Okay, good. That's what yeah. I wanted
and the
to
same,
try.
Now, this, was, this went the same for over in the what they call the pot room. This is a room where they melt these metals and make it. It's where they would melt magnesium and cast it into ingots or billets or slabs, depending on what a customer needed or what they were going to do with it. And there they would, it's like they had nine giant tubs of molten metal, which was magnesium, and they would make it like a soup. Each one had its own composition. They would have to add maybe more zinc, maybe 20 pounds of lead, maybe 5 pounds of iron. You know, depending on what the customer wanted, type of alloy, they could do it in these molten pots and then cast it into the form they wanted. Well, in between, once every 2 to 3 months, they would change all these pots out, and they would melt thorium for a week or two. And the thing about this thorium is it's just as dangerous as uranium, if not more so, because it was much more proliferant. It was ran much, much, much more than its uranium was. In fact, in one radiation cleanup alone, we have documentation where they removed over 106,000 tons of it. That totals 212 million pounds.
Oh my
now,
God.
That's a lot of radioactive waste in one radiation cleanup laying next to these residents' homes. Now, to produce 200 million pounds of waste, you have to produce almost a billion pounds of metal to create that much waste. And I'm giving them a lot of credit. That's a 20% loss. That's unacceptable. So even at a 10% loss, that would put it closer to 2 billion pounds they melted, radioactive material they melted in that factory. But I'm trying to keep it conservative because still a billion pounds is way too much, even on a conservative level. But this is what was sucked out of the room, and it was exhaust fans. This is the metal and the dust that was drifted over their homes, their yards, their gardens, their school. And when they got done, you know, melting it, they took the waste and piled it up beside their homes as well.
Wow.
That's where the 2 million pounds came from.
Wow, Larry.
And, you know, this was a well-known secret by the corporate owners, but not by the residents and only a handful of employees.
This is so, you know, this is why they keep it so secret, because if the masses of Americans knew that this was going on, the pitchforks would be out. This is unconscionable that they were doing this right next door to where a school was, did not warn the workers,
yeah,
did not warn anybody.
Years ago, someone walked out there and said, you know, could this factory produce this metal? When they should have walked out in the parking lot and looked at the residents, and their question should have been, should they produce this metal for the government? Because, you know, there's a difference between should and could. Yes, they could, but should they, given their location? And no one ever took that into consideration.
Or just relocate the residents. I mean, they've made millions and millions of dollars there. It would not have cost them. There's not very many people, as you suggested. They could have
spent over $10 million to clean up that waste site back in 1992. It took them actually 3 years to do it. It would have took $5 million, $4 million. Maybe even three, just to buy the residents out.
Wow.
But
wow.
No, that would be some form of admitting guilt, I believe. And if they could get away with it doing it cheaply, well, that's what they was going to do. Plus, they always have the blame game. You know, well, the company before us did it more than we did. And, you know, you talk to them and say, well, no, they're lying. You know, the company, they did more than we did. You know, so it's always a blame game. In fact, up to the year 2000, the uranium dust over my head was removed, and it was over 13.6 times over the safe limit. Now, the reason it was still up there, I believe, is back after they ran this radioactive metal in this uranium in this factory on my press, I believe they, after the process was done, after the 4 years were complete and the contract was filled, that the Dow Chemical told Mallinckrodt, well, now that you're done, you need to come in and clean this factory up. And I'm sure this billion-dollar giant, Mallinckrodt, told Dow, well, you know, it's your factory. You clean it. You know, it's not in our contract. Well, you know, this other billion-dollar giant, Dow, speaks back and says, well, you know, it's your mess. You need to remove it. And, of course, they got in a fight over whose fault it was and who needs to remove it. And what happened between it was no one cleaned it up. No one was going to take credit for it. And that's why it was still up there in the year 2000, raining down on top of me and my coworkers, two of which have had children with wives who had birth defects, their children. You know, and it just sort of speaks volumes once you go to that level of seeing the harm it's done.
Wow. Well, this is the thing. I mean, they knew.
I know.
At the time.
I know.
I mean, it's astounding. I mean,
I know.
They knew at the time exactly what they were doing, correct?
Absolutely. Documentation backs it up. There was no mistake about it.
Wow. This is just dumbfounding. And amazingly, you only found out after you started getting sick, correct?
Well, you're correct, correct. See, 6 months after I started getting ill, this was in 2002, the company, and it's illness. I've never been sick in my life. I was 42 years old. I was never needed glasses. I was never, ever in a hospital for anything. I could kick 6 inches over my head. All the young guys at the factory were so jealous of me. And anyway, I started coming down with these strange illnesses. And I remember handing in my health, all my doctor's reports to my company because our insurance went through our company. So I never thought of it at the time, but there's where the confidentiality clause between patient and doctor was broken. You see, now here was a company who was paying my bills that may have been responsible for my injuries. And they knew in advance by looking at my medical records, I believe. Now, this is all speculation to this point, of course, that they seen that I was acquiring radiation poisoning because of where I worked and the longevity of it. And because of this, they seen on horizon lawsuits coming up because of this. So to get rid, keep that from happening, they got rid of me and all my other coworkers and opened up under a new name and started their process all over again with new employees. Now, they laid off people who was there for 40 years. 40 years some of these men were there. They got rid of everyone. And
With any compensation, they just got rid of everybody, or did they compensate?
They put them out on strike. They gave them what's called a union-breaking contract, one that no one in their right mind would sign. And
wow.
That's how they got rid of everyone. And I'm sad to say, maybe I'm the litmus test that caused that to happen, because they was looking at the person who worked closest to this uranium with the more serious health problems springing up. And once they seen, you know, sort of the writing on the wall that these people are going to figure this out, they got rid of us before we could. Hope we all go our separate ways and drift off into the wind.
So let me ask you about this. That's a peculiar thing. You were saying you gave your medical records to your company? Like, you didn't go
right
directly to your insurance company?
Our insurance was through the company.
They paid
for our insurance. Yep.
But they paid for your insurance, but what about the HIPAA laws? Like, how could they have seen your records?
Well, you have to turn your medical records in to them to get paid.
What?
And, yes.
That was intentional. That's not an accident.
I believe
they
so,
too. They did that intentionally.
I mean, they could find out if your patients are have any past illnesses, history, HIV positive, anything. And
is that
still
legal?
That would change their attitude or their way they use you as an employee. If they, you know, and even misuse that. And I believe that's what happened here. I was the litmus test. Once they seen these, in fact, I remember handing in one medical note to the company to be paid. It was a respiratory doctor. I was having respiratory problems. And I remember reading in the letter saying that we're unaware what his route of exposure is causing these problems. Now, when I read that, I've never heard those words pertaining to me before, route of his exposure to cause these problems. I didn't quite understand what that meant, but I handed this letter in with the bill and everything to the company like every other employee did to get it paid. Now, I'm sure they had to make copies of these for their own records, but these could be misused as well. They could use them as an indicator saying, well, okay, we got some preliminary exposure ratings, looks like popping up here. What are we going to do about it? And they could sit around and, in these back rooms they do and say, okay, let's plan it this way. Let's get rid of the employees before they file any lawsuits, file bankruptcy, then they can't take a penny. And that's exactly what this company did. As soon as they got rid of us, they filed bankruptcy, and no longer can anyone sue them for anything whatsoever. Now, I'm sure they were still under obligation of the Price-Anderson Act as well, but I believe it was their gross negligence they was worried about was going to come back and bite them in the butt, because that's exactly what it was. Willful neglect for human health and safety.
I'm sorry, but who I want to know, do you know what human being was making these decisions there?
Well, when I was working there, it was a family business, and it was called the Barnes family. And the CEO is Chris Barnes. He's the owner of this factory now, and he was then. And he's went and changed the name, and he's still there today. And I believe he's the one who, well, I'm almost certain, because he is the CEO, and his brothers and sisters are all COOs and underneath him. So he's the one who's on top on this, and he's the one who makes the final decision, I believe, on what happens as far as the business goes. Because they file their taxes as a family business. And so I looked that up before. That's how I know that. I'm aware.
Has he ever apologized to any of the victims for the harm that he's caused?
Oh, no. And I don't think he would, because, again, that would be an admission of guilt, which could come back to, you know, haunt him later on down the road if he did that.
So here's a person who has profited greatly. I imagine they're richer than God. Murdering people.
No. He was a pizza parlor manager before his dad bought this factory for them.
What?
That's right. That's all he is, was a pizza parlor manager. And that's all he is still today. He just got lucky because his daddy bought him this factory, showed him what notes to sign and what letters to dot and T's to cross, and and then handed it to him. But as I see it today, he's still nothing more than just a pizza parlor manager who's in way over his head, who thinks he runs a big corporation. He's like Dow and all the other corporations before them, but it's not. He's still that same pizza parlor manager he was years ago before he got to that factory.
You know what, Larry? I have to say, of all you are, I think, are one of my favorite interviewees, because for me, you really are the epitome of what it means to be an American. Your attitude is so clear thinking. Your generosity towards people is amazing. I am just, if it was me, I would be spitting nails. But your level
of. I've been down that road, dear. I've been there. And, it's not productive. It really isn't. It's more detrimental.
Right.
Than anything else, but it does have its benefit, to blow off steam once in a while.
Wow.
And but I have a different ways of doing that now, which is more helpful. For instance, this owner of this factory who did this to me and my coworkers and to these residents, the only way I can find any kind of solace in all this is to be able to shut this factory down to keep it from producing any more of this toxic waste. And I believe I found a way of doing that, and I'm in the process now of making that happen. Now, as you know, the Price-Anderson Act protects people with a radiation license. It keeps them from, it's more or less a cover clause for people who work with radioactive material, that they can't go to jail or lose everything they have. And it's makes it difficult for us to get any kind of compensation from the people who've wronged us, as the owner of this factory has. So I took it upon myself to find another way around this, to find another way to shut this factory down. And that is, I believe I found it possible, was the machine that ran all this uranium back. Now, I told you about this press that I worked on for all these years.
Mm-hmm.
That ran over 3,200,000 pounds of uranium. This press, 10 years ago in November, I found it sitting on a back road, abandoned, the back half of it. I have photographs of it, and I had the chief of police out there. I had Senator Obama's assistant was out there. I had two lawyers out there looking at it. I had a TV crew out there looking at this machine sitting on the side of the road, abandoned. And, it was the reason everybody was there was because of its importance, its past history. If it was just a piece of machine out of a factory, no one would have ever showed up. But this machine produced millions of pounds of uranium. People wanted to come out. People wanted to know if anybody was in danger from it. Well, it turns out that they went to the factory and asked the owner, Chris Barnes, why this was sitting out there. And he told them he was trying to take it to a scrapyard, but the truck broke down. Well, that wasn't true. We found out that the guy hauling it out there got a ticket, and that's why he had to leave it there on the side of the road. Now, I'm getting to the point here. There's a point to this. Now, I always wondered where the front half of this machine was, because the back half, you have to understand, is the most least radioactive part. There was nothing ran through the back of it. It was through the front, you know, that the Play-Doh goes through. That's the most radioactive part. And that's the part that was missing off this press. And I always wondered and worked to try to find where it happened to that other half. Well, just recently, I was meeting with the Illinois EPA discussing some off-site exposures I found. And when they told me about the police ticket that they got for this gentleman who was pulling this radioactive press to the scrapyard and got pulled over. Well, I talked to employees who was working back then who are retired now. They told me that the gentleman was paid to cut this machine up, the front half, and haul it, and he was hauling it to his father's farm in Missouri and burying it. Now, when I heard this story at first, you know, that's all it is. It was just a story, a rumor, you know, and that's all there is. But when I ran it, when I was up at the EPA office, and when he had that ticket in front of him of this guy pulling this press through the scrapyard, see, that was the same guy who was paid to cut it up. This was the same guy who said he was hauling to his father's farm and dumping it. Well, on that ticket, it had his name, his birth date, and his address where he lives down in southern Missouri. Once we had that address, we knew then this is where he told everybody he was taking it and burying it. So we got on the Internet, we looked up some satellite photos from back then, and sure enough, the guy from the EPA office said, I see some soil disturbance. I knew then we found the front half of this radioactive press.
Did you find it?
Isn't that amazing?
Did you go there and look?
Well, that's just it. Now, I gotta, you know, I can't interfere with this. I have to make sure that the right people find this and take care of it. So I'm working now with the Department of Natural Resources. It's like the Missouri EPA. They're trying to find this radioactive material, and I'm also working with the Polk County prosecutor, attorney. He's the guy who's down in the county where this was dumped. I'm trying to get him to get a detective to find this gentleman who cut it up and dumped it down there. And if we find this radioactive material, then we may be able to file charges against the owner of this factory for taking it down there and dumping it, paying someone to take it down there and dump it. I have the FBI even looking over our shoulder, watching to see if we find this press, to see if they could come forward and file charges as well. I've been working with quite a few people. Even the state attorney here in, attorney general here in Illinois is also waiting for an outcome to this. Because if we could find this radioactive press and we can file charges against the owner, these will be felonies. Remember, it's across state lines. And if we could have him charged with a felony, we could have all his government contracts revoked and his government defense contractor's license pulled, therefore basically shutting his factory down. And it won't be me doing this. It'd be his own greed, because he could have disposed his press legally, but he decided to do it on the cheap, endangering everyone's lives and health down in southern Missouri.
Well, doesn't he have a responsibility? Doesn't he have a legal responsibility to tell the government exactly where it's at and what the... I mean, we're talking about a uranium press.
Here's the thing.
You can't just throw it away like a Dixie cup, can you?
The company that's there today does not have a radiation license. The company that's there today is not covered under the Price-Anderson Act. The company that paid this guy to dump this is going to be held responsible. You see where I'm going here?
So is this the company that paid him to dump it? It's the current one and not the prior?
Right, right. You see, after 6 months or several years after SCI, the company I worked for, filed bankruptcy and laid off all their employees, he started up a new company, the same owner. But this new company didn't have a radiation license. They paid this guy to cut this material up and get rid of it. Now, they knew it was radioactive. But what they're going to come back and claim, well, this press belongs to SCI, and SCI is bankrupt. Well, SCI, you're right, the press did belong to SCI, and it is radioactive. But SCI did not commit the crime. The company there today is the one that cut it up and took it across state lines in secret and buried it in secret. They're the ones who committed a crime, and they're the ones that don't have a radiation license, making them the viable defendant. And that's why the county prosecutor I'm working with me now is trying to find this and find this gentleman who took it down there and try to start this process in having it removed, placed somewhere safe, and then the litigation towards the owners.
Is it the same owners? Is it the same people?
Yep, it's the same guy. So, again, plausible deniability will not apply because he was there when he was cleaning the uranium up from over the dust over the top of it. So he can't say he didn't know. And the other thing is, well, why would he take the back half to a junkyard but bury the other half? Well, the half that was radioactive and not know it was radioactive. See, there's a little, so many ways this owner cannot excuse what he did. There's no excuse he has. He can't say he did not know. There's just too much documentation. And even though he'll try to blame it on the other company is the one that cut it up. The other company's employees were all gone, and it's the company that's there today that committed this crime. And that's why I believe they're liable, and the Price-Anderson Act won't protect them.
And we have no idea where this piece of equipment is.
Yes, we do. Like I said, we saw the aerial photos from the satellite photos.
But, I mean, they haven't actually found it. I mean, they might have moved
No. In fact, we just got the prosecutor. I had to wait till after the New Year's because a lot of government agencies and law firms and things like that, they shut down for 2-3 weeks. So I had to wait till this week to speak with them in detail about this, the prosecutor, county prosecutor. And I had told him, I said, this is a win-win for your citizens in your county. Once we find this radioactive material, you guys will not have to spend a penny to remove it. The Department of Natural Resources will step in, and they'll be the ones responsible for removing it and putting it somewhere safer. And at the same time, they'll be collecting evidence for you to prosecute the owner of our factory. And then again, the DNR will also file lawsuits against the owners because they'll have to pay for the cleanup and for what they did. Like, and again, I have the Attorney General up here in Illinois looking at them to file any kind of lawsuit, and the FBI may follow suit as well since this crossed state lines, and who knows, you know, radioactive waste can be used by a lot of bad people nowadays for a lot of bad reasons.
No kidding. That's why it's highly regulated. I mean, that's it's one
that's
of
why
the
I had their
dangerous...
attention. When I said, oh, well, there's over 5 tons of radioactive material missing, I had their full attention.
5 tons?
Oh, it's more than that. It's more like 10 tons of radioactive material. Yeah, that's how much is missing.
Wait a minute. I'd never heard that one. Tell me how 5 tons of radioactive material went missing. How did that happen?
Well, again, the back half of this press is so, you know, this press is like the size of a small locomotive, okay? And you ever seen a hydraulic cylinder on a jack, on a car jack? When you jack it up, you see that shiny cylinder come out of the top?
Yeah.
Okay? Well, lay it on its side and enlarge it. And that shiny cylinder is over 6 feet in diameter. It was bigger than I am tall. And that's
wow.
And it would squeeze the steel or this aluminum and magnesium and this uranium through a die. And the press itself is gigantic. Like I said, it's the size of a small locomotive. And the half that they cut up and all the overhead work, the back half of the press was at least 5 tons, and the rest of the framework was at least another 5 tons. And he was back and forth. One of the employees working there at the time told me he would pull up, he would load his truck up in a trailer on the back of with the material, he would drive off, come back, load up more, drive off, come back, load up more, drive off, and over till it was gone.
Oh, my gosh.
It took him 6 months to cut it up with a cutting torch. It was so huge.
You know, Larry, doesn't this make you wonder how many other companies, I mean, where else around the country this might have happened? Like, this type of gross negligence, the complete 100% lack of accountability.
Oh, it's reasonable to believe that this company isn't the first. Absolutely.
I mean, I'm speechless, honestly. Can you hear it? I'm just like, every time we speak, I'm just like dumbfounded at that complete lack of regard for life on our planet that the nuclear industry has perpetrated. It's astounding that our government continues to support this behavior.
Well, this press, this radioactive press that's buried down there, we know where it's at. We know who put it there. In fact, the guy who actually took it and dumped it on his farm was in the courthouse last November paying a ticket. He got pulled over for a suspended license or illegal registration or something. And he was just right down the hallway from this county prosecutor 6 weeks ago. And I told him, I said, if I'd have got hold of you a month sooner, you could have walked down there, grabbed him by the shoulder and said, hey, I need to talk to you. Where did you bury this? You know? And we would be a lot farther. We've
Think
been a lot
about
farther
this
ahead
guy's
today.
character, though. Think of this guy's character. He got pulled over in the first place. The truck was abandoned by the side of the road. Then he gets another ticket. Like, this guy is flagrant. I mean, illegally dumps a radioactive contaminated machine in his
He
own
may not
have
known it was. Remember, this owner may not have told him. He just may have paid him to do this. And again, that's, you know, I have to assume this. Because, again, they didn't tell us we were being exposed. Why would I assume they'd tell this guy?
Yeah, true that. That's true. Exactly.
But
thank you for
given the fact
that
he did go bury it, means, you know, he had to be aware of something or suspicious. But at the same time, you know, you'd have to look at his past history. You know, what kind of person is he? Is he a down on his luck kind of person, is what I was understood to believe by the people who used to talk to him inside the factory. You know, they used to talk to him every day. That's why they knew he was taken to his father's farm. He told them that that's where he was taking it. And they said, you know, he would come in, he'd be filthy, he'd be drunk half the time. No one seemed to notice or care. So I believe he may have been a down-on-his-luck person that the owner of the factory took advantage of to do this one dirty job. And then as soon as it was gone, so was he.
What year was this done? What year was this?
2005.
So by now, for sure, this man has some type of radioactive exposure.
Well, you got to remember, he cut this thing up in small pieces with a cutting torch. He breathed in a lot of smoke, a lot of dust, and I'm sure a lot of the particulates that was still attached to this press room, its production. Oh, my goodness.
Do you think
so
that he
believe,
knows now?
I honestly believe if they find him down there, the county prosecutor or detectives find him, and they bring this question to him, where is it at? He has no loyalty to the owner of this factory, and I believe he would be more of a witness, more valuable as a witness against the owner of this factory than anything else. Even though we have witnesses that were in the factory that was watching him cut this up at the time, they're willing to step forward and also speak in front of the court if necessary. So not only do we have witnesses in the factory watching him cut it up, but if we get this gentleman to flip on the owner, let's say, I don't think that'd be any problem because, like I said, he may not even known it was radioactive. He may not have known he was poisoning his own farm.
Might be the reason he has cancer today. I mean, we don't know the state of his medical condition.
No. But still, you know, I like to think the best of people until the evidence bears out the difference. But, you know, as I understand it today, as I look at it today, he's a victim like I am. And,
wow, that's an
now,
interesting
he knowingly
way
did this, well, he's still a victim just like I am. Because, you know, those guys who melted this radioactive metal, who ran this through the machines, they were told it wasn't dangerous enough to harm them, even though it was radioactive. The owner could have told them the same thing. Well, you got to bury it, it's radioactive, but it won't hurt you. You know, they told me one time you had to be allergic to it. I swear, that's exactly what they said. Yeah, that's exactly what they said.
Your supervisor told you had to be allergic to radioactive.
When I was a young kid and I first started working there, someone told me that block of metal I was sitting on was radioactive. And I go, what are you talking about? He goes, yeah, that's thorium. So
what?
I asked the foreman later on that day, I go, you know, is that radioactive? He goes, barely. He goes, it won't hurt you. I go, are you sure? He goes, yeah, you got to be allergic to it for it to actually bother you. And so, you know, I figured, well, I just won't, you know, hang around there anymore and I'll be fine. And that's exactly was the mindset. You know, they sort of implanted that in people. Well, it ain't that bad. It ain't going to harm you. And that's sort of the way they got rid of it. You know, when someone did have a question, they downplayed the seriousness.
That's exactly what they're still continuing to do. I
and
mean,
it's
they're
still today.
They still deny that the radioactive contamination is just that harmful. I mean, it's completely mind-boggling. And yet, as in your case, they can deny that radiation causes harm, but they can't deny the illness that radiation causes.
Well, here's the thing. I learned from getting the cancer fund for the employees that it takes facts. Facts are your friends. You know, speculation and guesswork gets you to the facts, but facts is what wins the case. It's like it's not a cake until it has icing on it, and facts is that icing. And I worked for years to get all the documents and records, radiation readings, licensing numbers, everything we needed in order for our factory to get that cancer fund from NIOSH. And with that, it was, you know, my understanding at the time was that, you know, when I first found out I wasn't alone, there was others that were poisoned by this as well. That's when I took it upon myself to, you know, to look into this cancer fund, to try to get it to benefit these employees who are sick from it. See, I've never had cancer, So all these years I worked to get that installed, it was never going to benefit me, but I couldn't ignore these employees who would have been turnovers. I was ignored like they were by the owner, and I could not become this owner. So, and same goes with the residents. You know, when I found out that their exposures and their health problems, I knew then I couldn't ignore them as well. Again, that'll make me like the owner, ignoring me and my family. So that's why I worked for years to try to get them the recognition they deserve and the compensation they rightly deserve as well.
How far away do you live from this factory?
Oh, I live quite a ways. I live about 10 miles from it. And,
wow.
You know, I've never really lived close to this factory or anything of that nature. In fact, you know, I've never lived in a factory next to it like these residents have, or I've never had no family live there. But nonetheless, we are a family. We are related, not by marriage or blood, but by this contamination.
Wow. This is just, you know, it's, I just, can you hear? I'm just completely dumbfounded. I'm without words that, you know, I would think that at somebody in our government would, Senator Chappelle Nadal, who
yeah,
is
Nadal,
in,
yeah, I know who you're talking
I
about.
I mean, she is the only elected official I have ever heard who stands up on the floor of the House of her government and says, these residents deserve compensation. They deserve acknowledgement that they're being harmed. I'm just dumbfounded that we have an entire...
On December 6th, Ms. Chappelle Nadal wrote, shout out to the Caucasian man across the river in Illinois helping African Americans get the downwinder status compensation. You are a hero, sir. I wonder who
wow.
she was talking about.
Mr. Larry Bergen. Yeah,
I'm the committee chairman on these residents in Venice. I'm the only white man on the committee, and they made me their chairman. This is both not only an honor, but a great responsibility because they chose, by all forms, an outsider to represent them, someone who's never lived there, someone who's not even the same color as them, someone who doesn't attend their church, but they trusted me enough to make me their committee chairman. And because of that, I take it very seriously what I do in trying to find them help and compensation.
So you're telling me that this factory
the
is
reason they got
built...
The reason they did this to this community and got away with it is because all these residents are poor and black.
Wow.
And that's how they got away with poisoning these people living next door. No one
wow.
ever, you know, they didn't have a voice in the community like most people do.
Wow.
They never even wow. put signs up on the fence saying keep out or danger or radiation. If they did that, then they would have known. So they never, ever put any kind of warning on the fence of any type. Even still today, there's none on the fence. Yet, they removed over 200 million pounds of radioactive waste off of it and an additional 7 million pounds of PCBs. Now, we didn't even get into that aspect, but it went from being a toxic waste site to a toxic stew. See, there was another 7 million pounds of PCBs there. It took 35 rail cars to remove it.
Oh, my gosh.
Good God.
I mean, and this is just one community that's attached to this.
One community, yes. About 10 blocks.
And we're not even talking about what happened in St. Louis. I mean,
no, no, no.
You know,
that's a completely separate, you know, problem and... It, see, at those sites is where it was dumped and where it was stored. Here, it was actually produced and dumped. It was, they got the double end of the stick on this one. See, they just didn't bring here and dump it next to their homes. They produced it and processed it and melted here as well. So they got both ends of the stick.
Wow. And they never warned
Westlake
any of the
landfill,
children.
I feel sorry for those residents. But keep in mind, at least they had the sense of mind to bury it under tons of dirt. Here, over here in Madison, they just piled it up. And you can see it in the photographs, a big, tall pile of this radioactive waste that's sitting above ground. The employees in affidavits said that it was as tall as a two-story house and over a football field long, this radioactive
what?
Waste. And, yes, yes. And in the year 1973, they shipped off 100 rail cars of it, and then they just leveled it. That big mound, they just spread it across the ground to even it so, you know, the pile would disappear. So on these 40 acres next to the residents' homes and down the street from the school, they didn't remove all the radioactive waste. They just got rid of the most toxic and then leveled all this other thorium dust out all across
the Did they cover it up with concrete or anything
nope,
at
nope,
all?
Nope, 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 nope. It sat there until 1992, and that's when the company Environmental Restoration Group came in to remove it. Both Dow Chemical and Conalco paid a joint financial cleanup for this. So both of these corporations dumped this waste on this lot, and both of them paid to have it removed.
So now, for
Conalco
20
is now
years?
Alcoa.
So for
yeah, it was 20 years after
the fact. People were exposed. I mean, the dust. The children were playing outside right next to uranium
and
dust.
And it was coming out of the exhaust stack, or the exhaust fans as well.
And our government knew about this, or was this something that they weren't at all aware of it?
Here's the thing. When they had the contractor clean this up, it was a private contractor. In other words, they didn't have to tell anybody anything they were doing. Now, when they got done with the radiation cleanup, they had to hand in all their records to the EPA. But the EPA don't go through them. They put it on a shelf and say thank you. That's the way it's done.
Oversight whatsoever by the government.
Now, when they removed the uranium dust, over my head, that was a different story. That was the government's metal. That was the uranium belongs to the government and it's their responsibility. They had a public meeting. They had for all the residents. They had and they downplayed it as well. And they went through all the legal procedures and everything to remove this safely and everything like that. And but when it comes to private contractors, you don't know what's going on. In fact, the very first part of this cleanup was actually on the wrong side of the fence. The first phase of this cleanup out next to residents' yards and this waste site was actually next to the road next to their homes. They had to go over 5 feet down all the way up the length of the road. I guess the radiation stops after it gets to asphalt. But it's my understanding that there wasn't license or their contract didn't tell them to go any farther than that point. They was only supposed to clean up the radiation on that site. So the very first phase of their cleanup was actually an off-site exposure next to the roadway next to the residents' homes. And I was reading the documents, and they said they did it in such a way to not bear a burden upon the residents, so they did it as quickly as possible. They dug up all the radioactive waste and took it on the waste site and dumped it for later removal. Now, the thing is, why would they do this as quick as possible? Because it was a dead-end road. How would it be an inconvenience to the neighborhood? It was more like carjackers. They were trying to do it as quick as possible before someone saw them or asked them any questions. That's what I believe.
Wow, Larry. I have to say, well, we have about a minute and a half left. I want to, thank you for being a friend to our show, and thank you for coming on regularly. Every time I speak with you, we uncover and we peel back another layer of the onion of this complete
fallacy. Remember, this ain't St.
Louis.
This is just one small town, six blocks, a factory, and six blocks around it were discussed today.
Wow.
Now, imagine it about your neighborhood, your community. What you don't know about, if you know, people watching and listening today, it doesn't hurt to ask a question. It only hurts if you don't.
Yeah. Well, I think I've shared with people what happened to me when I went and Googled on the EPA website, Redondo Beach toxic. It turns out it was the reason I moved from California is I was being poisoned. And that's another story. We have about 45 minutes left.
Well, go right ahead.
I want to thank you, Larry, for joining us. I hope you will come back and keep sharing this information and continue to share the progress that you're making on your case. We have about 30 seconds left.
So do I. I'd love to be able to make progress and share it with you.
That is so great. Well, look, thank everybody for joining us. Please share this podcast. It is vital. Please tell people to go to our YouTube channel, listen to it. You can go to our website, listen to the podcast. You've been listening to Larry Bergen, a victim of really World War II and uranium. And put your courage feet on. Take some action. Change is possible only if you take action. Thanks, Larry.